With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Kia ora, welcome to another Aotearoa Rugby Pod. I'm Ross Carl, joined in studio as usual by James Parsons. Down with the New Zealand Māori team, the Māori All Blacks in Wellington. Bryn Hall beaming into us. Usually at this time, Bryn's, you know, still partying after a final, but he got that out of the way a week ago, so we're ready to chat some code.
He's looking fresh.
He's looking fresh.
That's just a cheap shot.
He's looking fresh.
On the other hand, Chipper over here, he's not quite as fresh.
Oh, no, I'm fresh. I'm fresh.
It's been a couple of days.
Couple of days, but no, look.
Well, I saw him on TV as well. I saw him on TV and a couple of Instagram posts with Chipper in the background. So fair play to you, Chip, mate.
I was pretty happy. It was good to see the club get to celebrate a victory in a final. 18 years in the wings, and pretty happy. A lot of work's gone in behind the scene by a lot of people, and it was a good night for the club, and I think the city as well. They're a big motivating factor for the team. Getting our community and our fans back behind us and actually liking us is a big factor.
Mate, you're going to be smiling all the way through next season.
Oh, yeah. Well, for a couple more days.
Okay, look, we'll get to the final really soon, but of course there's bigger news at the moment, and that is the All Blacks selection. Four new All Blacks and five uncapped All Blacks, if you look at the George Bauer selection. We've got Ethan de Groot, or is it Groot? I don't know. Ethan Blackadder, Finlay Christie, Quinn Tupaia. Now, Quinn, you were there for Quinn's announcement. Tell us about how that was.
Yeah, it was real funny. I think there's a little bit of an awareness that, you know, there's possibly one of our midfielders making it, and I think with a few injuries with Anton being, he was named, but, you know, possibly being injured, and then Jack being injured as well. So, Quinn had no idea. It was a really special moment, actually. Roger Randall, I think, had a little bit of an inkling, and so he was just constantly looking at him like this to try not to give it away, and would look straight back or like look in the distance, thinking they're like, oh, I'm not seeing you, I don't know what's happening. But his name was called, and got a great ovation from the boys. And he had no idea that it was coming, so he called his family away, and then he's actually gone into camp. I think he's going into camp. He's left us this morning, had breakfast with him, and what an exciting opportunity for him. I think those kind of announcements to be there a part of, it's pretty special, and so it'll be something that he's really looking forward to.
You ever say it's pretty well done by the All Blacks coaches? I mean, putting him, you presume they already knew he was in the All Blacks team, but of course he was going to be in the Māori All Blacks team as well. So to put him in there so he had no suspicion of what might be coming up, it's quite a clever play.
Yeah, well, massive, because, you know, there's a couple of other, I suppose, positions around the loose forwards that could have been in both the Māoris and the All Blacks, and you sort of saw the Māoris name and you're like, oh, well, they must be in the All Blacks, and sort of didn't expect anyone to be jumping from one team to the next. It was a great ploy, but I think fully deserved. Obviously Nani's departure and then a few injuries that Bryn sort of alluded to, and the fact that I suppose there's a lot of guys that have the ability to play 13 and can move to the wing, probably counted against Lester Faianuku and maybe Jonah Nareki to fill that sort of space around that wing spot, and they wanted to take a genuine 12, genuine midfielder, and believe they had guys that could cover positions in other spaces. So that makeup of the squad allowed for a genuine out-and-out midfielder to be picked.
Yeah, Braden Enol came to fitness and form just at the right time.
Yeah, he did. I think, you know, came back from a pretty devastating injury in that North vs South last year, and you know, worked really, really hard in the off season, and full credit to actually our physio staff and better getting him back to where he needed to be, because he actually ended up coming better player with the scores within his strength and his power and his speed, which were already off the charts before he did his ACL. So he did really well to get back and come back in the Trans-Tasman and got a few good games in him under his belt. So I think the fact that he is, you know, an out and out centre, which is probably a good position for him, and you know, especially in that environment, you've got a lot of those players, Anton, Quinn, those two can alternate between 12 and 13, whereas Braden's an out and out 13. So the form did come at the right end of the year, and you know, it's again another opportunity for a guy that hasn't played a lot of rugby at that environment, and he's going to test himself in these few games coming up in the next couple of weeks.
Do you see Quinn coming? Did you think this guy's definitely going to make it?
Oh, I think we always knew he was going to be an All Black. I mean, yeah. We spoke in depth during Super Rugby Aotearoa how impressive he was. I've always been a big fan of his. He got that injury. Just as he was starting to have, you know, great success in Aotearoa, and then Alex Nangerville stepped up massively for the Chiefs. Then he came back, and I think that performance against the Rebels was outstanding. And then he backed it up against the Waratahs the following week, and I suppose those sort of performances nailed down. He only had three games in that Trans-Tasman, but statistically he was off the charts. He was involved heavily, and his skill set, is right up there. He probably doesn't. He isn't the complete package yet. You know, he probably doesn't have that kicking game, but in terms of his attacking game with ball in hand and you know, his physicality and defence, and it's also his physicality and willingness to want to clean rucks and all those sorts of little extra effort areas and support lines and wanting to connect with his teammates and those sorts of things is, the uncoachable stuff, and that's either in you or it's not, he's high in. So you know that when he gets an environment like the All Blacks, his game's going to only go from strength to strength. And looking forward to seeing, I suppose, the battle between, Dave Harvilli, who's been exceptional and got himself back in there, you know, now himself in there for this June series to get some minutes in that black jersey and put their hand up for, rugby championship.
Oh, Anton's got a slight injury, right? So you'd have to think that Harvilli's got the inside running to get that first start at 12, wouldn't you, Brent?
Yeah, I think so, and you know, it comes through injuries and that kind of stuff, but I think it's warranted on his form throughout the whole year. He was tremendous in the Super Rugby Aotearoa. We talked around that a lot during that kind of period of play, and then obviously in Super Rugby Trans-Tasman, it kind of had that form again. So, if it's warranted on form, Davies got the opportunity to do that, and then again, it's going to be interesting to see who they put at centre. Do they put Braden there, who spent a bit of time with David throughout the year and have a combination already, or you know, do they go in a different direction with Quinn as well, or you know, obviously Anton being injured as well. So, but Davey, I think, look, he's probably the former 12 in the comp, especially in New Zealand. That's my belief behind it. So you wouldn't be surprised to see him getting the first crack in the first game.
If we go back to the old cohesion factor.
Ben
Darwin, I think, with Richie there, you'd have to think that combination, that 10-12 combination, they'll look to give that a run first and foremost. But honestly, I think Quinn Tupai, give him an opportunity. If he can deliver that sort of performance that we saw against the Rebels, he's got a huge opportunity to almost stamp his mark and hold a position in this All Black squad for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, he's an interesting fella because, you know, we were all talking about Nani until 3 weeks ago, and then the announcement that Nani was leaving happened. So 3 weeks ago you would have called Quinn Tupai a bolter. But now that we've known Nani's going, he's not really a bolter, is he? He's a form player within the All Blacks team.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, bolters are... I don't think there are bolters as such anymore. But I think he's caught a lot of people by surprise. Like, I'll be honest, it's not that you were expecting him to be picked, but you're not shocked that he's going to be an All Black either. So I suppose in this day and age, he could be termed a bolter, but I certainly am not surprised to see him being an All Black in terms of his performance. Like I said, statistically, over this whole season from Super Rugby Aotearoa and Trans-Tasman, his numbers, warrant selection.
Stack up. Another person who wanted selection has big numbers, Ethan Blackadder. Give us a bit of insight into Ethan. You know, what has made him an All Black? Obviously, he's got good lineage, but, you know, he's put in a lot of work over a few years.
Yeah, he has. I think his work ethic and work rate is second to none, and you know, that's probably his massive characteristic that he's having. A lot of people would say it's those second efforts that Chip talked around. Working off the ball that you don't see unless you, you know, obviously you understand a bit around footy. You see those kind of attributes, and then his biggest thing is he's physical. Loves the contact area. You know, he'll tackle a wooden stump if he had to. So, but I think the biggest improvement that he's had actually is probably his skill set. Especially this year for us off our lineouts, if we had a short man lineout, five man or a four man, and Richie would give the pass to a forward, he was predominantly the main guy that we'd use due to his skill set to be able to get it out the back and put players into space. So that's been a massive improvement that Ethan's worked on the last probably 12 to 24 months, and probably saw really how beneficial it was for us in our game with his skill set. So he's got a great growth mindset as well, and you know, he'll just put his head down, go to work, and he'll go into the environment and learn as much as he can like a sponge. But I think you know, the improvements that he's made, I definitely reckon around his skill execution and his skill set has been a massive improvement and probably led him to, yeah, being an All Black this year.
So second efforts, that's getting back up off the ground after you made a tackle. That's a second effort.
Yeah, so I think and what enables you after you have those second efforts is that high work rate. So Ethan, when you look at him statistically, he has high numbers in carries, he has high pass numbers, he has high tackle numbers, he has high ruck numbers. So you have to be constantly on your feet to be able to do that. And once he makes one impact, he's looking for another. And I think that's what Bryn's getting at. He's always involved, he's always putting himself in a position to be involved. And I think there's one thing doing those second efforts, but then it's been effective. Putting yourself in a position to do things. You can do second efforts and still be ineffective because, you know, but he's always had a big motor, so he's fit as well. But he's put on a bit of size, I feel, this season, like especially in Super Rugby Aotearoa. You know, he's averaging, you know, I think probably between 5.5 to 7 metres and per carries. And that's quite a decent amount of metres if you think, because you've got to get a few post-contact metres there. And I don't know if that would have been the case a year ago. So he's put on a bit of bulk, and he's really coming out through the other side of defences. And then, you know, his passing game. So he's got those high carry, getting through there, using a bit of footwork, skill set, but he's got those high pass numbers. So you can't just think he's going to carry all the time. He's not a one-trick pony. You have to be alive in case he passes as well, which then gives him the ability to make you think. And then, you know, that creates a little bit more metres in his carry as well. And then I think the most important thing is he's around a 90% tackler, but he's also dominant with a lot of his tackles. So he's ticking a lot of the boxes, and that's probably why he's, you know, got the nod ahead of guys like Tom Robinson and Cullen Grace, who was obviously there previously. It's not that those guys don't have the same mindset. It's just that he's probably done it on a more spread out time over the season. You know, than they have, due to the fact that they were probably injured or haven't got on the field as many times, due to, I suppose, competition for spaces in their teams. You know, Tom and Akita were fighting for spots a lot, and I think, you know, Cullen Grace had to move between 8 and 6 a lot. So his consistency in selection helped, but his versatility, Ethan having, he could go between 6, 7 and 8, and I think his impact didn't change a lot. You know, like he made every post a winner every time he went in whatever jersey, and I think that would have, you know, John Plumtree would have been liking that. He would have thought, you know, it doesn't matter what jersey he wears, he just gets out there and gets the job done.
So what jersey does he wear, though, for the All Blacks? It doesn't matter.
I don't know, but I'd say it gives him a great opportunity to be a bench spot, and that versatility is exciting for a coach to have, because if someone goes down early or, you know, It just gives you the ability to hold him in the 23 and know that 6, 7 or 8 goes down. You know, even to the point, he's quite a good line-out option as well, that you probably chuck him in the second row as well. And he'd just put his head down, bum up sort of thing. That's his mindset and that's his attitude. He just wants to be on the grass.
Versatility, is that where the loose forward game is at now? You look through this list and, you know, Ethan Blackadder, versatile. Okay, Shannon Frizzell's a straight 6. Kiro Ioane, 6'8". Luke Jacobson, 6'7", 8". Dalton Papali'i, 6'7", 8". Adi Savia, 7'8". Like, Bryn, is this how it is now? You just got to be able to play all three?
Well, I think so. I think, you know, for the fact that I guess that's kind of where the hybrid kind of it's kind of going. And I think you look at a lot, like you look at Hoskins and Akita, you know, they're predominantly were playing eights when they were younger, but now they have the ability to play six and eight. And so I think it's having to understand as well that for team selections, especially in the All Black environment, having the ability to play multiple positions is going to help you with that. And so they probably have their own idea of what that starting six, seven, eight will be. But you, like you said, you're around, you know, Ethan and that's been able to have that ability, or even obviously Luke Jacobson who's come back into the fold, being able to have that ability to play six, seven, eight. It's just going to hold you well in good stead to be able to, you know, have that kind of bench role. Or again, you might be able to start through through an opportunity. So, but yeah, I think it is the way, especially in New Zealand at the moment with how many good players there are, having that ability to play not just one position, be it an out and out seven or out and out six or eight. It just helps you, especially with team selection on the when you do play and being involved in squads as well.
So what do you do when you make up your decision on who's going to play six, seven and eight? Is it body shapes, skill sets? I mean, how is it more difficult now to make those selections because of that?
Look, I think line-out options comes into it, you know, in terms of what style of play, width, direct. There's many of variables that will come into it, and that's I suppose they've already had that discussion when picking this squad, and they'll have a good idea of the way they want to play, where the evolution of their game wants to go to, building towards 2023, and that's where they'll be looking in these players, and they'll believe this is the start of that, so I suppose, pathway to 2023 and knuckling that in, you know, starting straight away.
So let's imagine that these guys are all fit. You know, friend Shannon Frizzell's not far out of a moon boot, right? You'd be thinking Hoskins at eight, Shannon at six, and Dalton or Ardy at seven, one of those two. I suppose Ardy at seven.
Yeah, I mean, it's a hard one. It's a hard loose forward trio to pick. I think it's going to be the toughest part of the team to pick. But, I mean, Shannon's physicality and dominance throughout Super Rugby Aotearoa was test match level, wasn't it? You know, and that was the sort of, you know, I'd hate to always compare it to, but that Jerome Kino sort of physicality on D and those tough carries. But, you know, obviously it's that edge skill that we see in Akira that they really liked towards the end. But, you know, you'd probably think that he gets, you know, first crack at it. You know, Hoskins been great at eight. You know, Luke Jacobson's there in that discussion as well. Dalton has just been exceptional. And so is Ardy, and where his knee's at. I mean, I'm not trying to sit on the fence here, but it's so hard to pick. It genuinely is hard to pick.
Yeah, I think it's going to be the toughest decision-making to tell you of who's going to be the 6, 7, 8. But I think the greatest thing, and you know, no disrespect to the opposition that we are playing, those guys are actually going to get opportunities to play. You know, so, you know, sometimes if you play in, you know, Australia or South Africa back-to-back, you know, probably the flexibility of giving guys opportunity might not be there. But I think for the fact that these first, you know, the first three test matches of the year, I think guys are going to get opportunities. And so when they do have the opportunities, they're just going to have to make every post a winner, because I think the competition in that department is going to be the toughest throughout the whole year.
Well,
so
on that point, guys will get opportunities. They might say, look, we know enough about an Ardy. We know enough about a Shannon. You know, it might be,
give these guys a crack.
Let's see what they've got on back-to-back test weeks. You know, because it's no secret that Artie's had a tough time with that knee. It might be a just chance to get him under in there with Gilly and really get a, you know, I know he wants to play footy 24/7 and he won't want that, but you know, it might be an opportunity to just see what other guys have got to go back-to-back-to-back at test match level.
Now, the other interesting selection here, Finlay Christie, obviously your area of expertise. He's in there. TJ is not available yet for the All Blacks, so Finlay's gone in there. Obviously, Falau Fakatava wasn't available because of injury. But what you've seen of Finlay so far this year, you know, do you think he's pretty much in line for playing test footy?
I think so. I think, you know, probably that Trans-Tasman tournament was a really good a good way to see Finn. And I think in the first part of the Super Rugby Aotearoa, he had a few injuries and wasn't able to get on the field as much. But, you know, I look at the five games that he did play, including that final where he was a massive cog in that wheel for how the Blues were so successful. So, you know, his passing game is great. And then his box kicking as well has been massive around the Blues and the impact that he's had on the game. And so on the weekend as well, he kicked, you know, more than Oatsy, and was a real part of them trying to suffocate the Highlanders and putting them in real bad positions to try and get out half. So his kicking game has been great for not only this year, but even with his time in Tasman and the growth that he's had in that department has been great. And then defensively as well, he's like a little pocket rocket nugget. You know, there was a lot of times there he made a lot of tackles, but it was more so at the break. And I think there was one, they made a line break and he's just flying in like an absolute missile trying to clean out one of the players. So, yeah, he's very physical for a guy that's not really big, but, you know, pound for pound, he gets the job done. So I think the growth and collectively around all that, he can show that he can play at tempo with the Blues when they've had that forward going forward and they've had good go forward ball. If it's wet or they want to play a kicking style game like they did on the weekend in that final, he can do that. And he's also obviously got the ability defensively and been able to be tough and cleaning rucks and that kind of stuff as well. So no, I think it's warranted for sure. And yeah, it's going to be a great opportunity for him, probably getting an opportunity in the next three games before the Rugby Championship.
He obviously likes a challenge, because when he went to the Blues, Sam Knock and Jonathan Rudu were already there. You know, it wasn't going to be a straightforward walk into that nine jersey there either, was it? So he's had to overcome a few things to get his All Black jersey.
Yeah, he has, but I think he came from Tasman under Leon and knew the tack style and structures that Leon was probably going to implement. And you know, he had a lot of success at Tasman. His game flourished in that environment. And Bryn sort of touched on it. He's had a few injuries and just hasn't been able to string enough games together to get his game going. But in Trans-Tasman, he's had a string of games and we just started to see it these last two or three where his game's just gone up a level. You know, his match fitness has gone up a level. His speed to ruck has been exceptional, but also his decision making when it hasn't, you know, when it's been wet weather, is when he's been able to nail his box kicks. And then we've also seen the little mongrel side of him, which all nines have, I might add. But you know, he's winning breakdown turnovers, he's cleaning rucks, you know, he's got a tackle percentage of 85%. You know, he's not afraid to put his body in front of anyone. He'll fit right in to the All Black environment around his attitude and his eagerness and willingness to learn. So it's exciting for him, and I don't know if you saw it on the Blues social media page, but you know, seeing him around the lads and getting that recognition, you can see he's also a great man off the field, and there's a lot of love for him in every team he goes in. So it's not only is he performing on the field in terms of what he does as a rugby player, but as a bloke, he's a good man as well.
That was an awesome moment for him. There was one part of that video that was interesting, because Tom Robinson turns around, gives him a congratulation, gets his phone out, he's filming it, and then you see the moment he's finished filming, he's back on the desk and he's like looking anxiously at the screen, like, is my name going to be here or what? And tough on him, probably.
I've got his stats here from Trans-Tasman as well, and that's what I was saying with Ethan Blackadder. You talk about a man who talks about double efforts, wants to run through a brick wall for the teams he's involved in. You know, he tackled at 94%. He only missed three tackles in Trans-Tasman, played 350 minutes. You know, carries hard. You know, good line-out option. You know, good leader. He ticks all the boxes, but it's just in a really jam-packed environment. Kept one of the All Blacks, as in his teammate Akita Ioane, on the bench for a lot of the season. So, you know, he must be right there. I'm sure that he'll be having a conversation or getting some feedback, and knowing Tom and the way he wants to progress, he'll be asking, you know, where do I need to improve and how can I get better? So he'll keep knocking on the door. He'll be going back to his beloved Northland, Taniwha, and going up there with a great attitude and mindset to lead them the way he's led the Blues. To no doubt another successful season.
And there's a very good chance he could end up in black by the end of the year, because the loose forwards often fall over at some point. He'll get his chance.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think he's just got to keep, you know, he's another one that he's had some injuries, and like Finlay, he's now starting to string a number of games together at that level. And if he can keep doing that for Northland, you know, there's a lot of test matches this year, touch wood. You know, like you say, just got to keep fit, keep knocking the door down, keep putting the performances. As a wise man once told me, your only currency is the performance on Saturday. So if you can keep doing that, keep putting that in front of the selectors, then you're in the front of their mind.
Who's the wise man?
Liam Barry.
Oh, he would know. Lister Fyinga Nuku, probably another one of the guys who's...
I just think it's that genuine 12. They wanted a 12, and they didn't carry that extra sort of centre wing, because there's just so many of them. It's not a performance thing.
No.
It's not. It can't be. Same with Jonah. I just think it was just the makeup of the squad and they needed that 12, out and out 12.
So give me an insight, Bryn. Like when one of your mates, you know, is in line, doesn't quite make it, do you flick him a text? Do you just leave it be? Like, what do you do when a player's in that situation where there's a lot of hype around them, people are talking about them, and then it doesn't happen?
Yeah, I think it's tough. And also, you know, first and foremost, you're your mate and you want what's best for them. I think it's having a good understanding around what their personality is like. And, you know, some guys you can probably address it really head on and saying, you know, tough luck and give them a pat on back and that kind of stuff. Or whereas some others personally, they might just need a bit of time and to be able to give them a bit of time to process it and then have a wee little chat with them later on. So I think, you know, understanding what their kind of personality is like and the way you do address them, because yeah, it's obviously it's a tough conversation to have and you just want the best for your mate. So yeah, that's probably the way we probably do it. And yeah, that'd probably be one of the things that you're trying to do to try and best help your mate who's missed out on selection.
Alex Hodgman's one of those guys.
Yeah, I thought he had two massive games. Like, he, you know, obviously came into his own, you know, the week before the final and then the final were his two best performances. And, you know, just obviously just not enough in terms of obviously Ethan's showing more consistency over the season. Unfortunately, you know, had that slight hiccup in terms of hitting Lynchies in the head and got that red card and then obviously stood down for 3 weeks. And you know, that's a big bulk of the season when it's quite short like this. And then you know, you come back into the team and guys have been performing well, so you start on the bench and then you work your way back into starting, and he finally got that and he strung 3 weeks together, but just not enough. I think his performances were really strong when he was in the All Blacks, and that won't be forgotten. I think when he got in the All Blacks last year, he looked comfortable. He looked like one of those guys that was comfortable. I mentioned that last week. So again, like, you know, not saying that there will be injuries or whatever, but if someone falls over, hell of a guy to call on. A true professional, will stay ready, will be ready, and if needed, will be ready to be called on.
What do you like about Ethan de Groot?
I suppose he's young, so he's ready to be coachable, and he'll go into that environment, you know, eyes wide open. And I think he's got a high work rate. Like, if you watch the Waratahs game, like, he scored 2 tries in that game, and he just wanted to carry everything. He wanted to tackle everything. He wanted to scrum every 2 seconds. And I think you've seen, you know, he didn't get as many opportunities last year, but every time he's been on the field, whether it's starting or coming off the bench, he's wanted to, you know, impose himself on the game, which isn't easy to do as a loose head. But it's been one of those years where, for some reason, you've been watching these games and you're like, you've walked away from them remembering Ethan de Groot.
Yep.
Do you know what I mean? Which is hard to do as a loose head prop. But every time you've watched the Highlanders, for some reason, he's always done something that made you remember him. And I think that's why he's there, is you haven't been able to ignore his performances. Whether I don't think it's been about his core roles consistently at this stage. I think it's been more about his work rate, his work ethic. But I think getting in that All-Black environment, his scrummaging and his line-out work will only go from strength to strength.
Yeah, so did we need more ball-carrying props? Is that where this is at? They're looking
No, I think we all know that the All-Blacks want a complete player in every position.
Yeah.
So it's not like, I think Alex is a ball-carrying prop. I think, you know, George Bauer's a ball-carrying prop. They're all ball-carrying props. I'm just saying there's something about him this year that was infectious to watch.
Yeah.
He caught your eye. And every time I was either watching a Highlanders game or I was at the ground live, if I didn't know who it was or I couldn't see who it was, I was like, oh, who is that? Oh, Ethan de Groot. You know, like, he just something about the season, he caught my attention. And I think that was the same with a lot of people watching the games.
Mm. George Bauer, he got a little bit of attention last year, made the squad. We've had a change of framing. This is amazing. We're a whole different set. There's Continentals coming up for us.
Yeah, mate. No, I've just got my roommate flowing around. So
who are you in the room with?
Didn't want to. I'm with Josh. Oh, actually, friend of the show is Joshuani, actually.
Joshuani. Come on, Josh.
Joshuani, he's in his tower. He's just coming over here. Here he is. Yeah, there he is.
Just in the tower.
Good team.
Hey, mate.
hell of a 3-point nudge the other night.
He just got out of the sauna. Obviously, celebrated a little bit for the Highlanders. So, just getting in that sauna.
I thought he had.
Sorry, but now we're talking about George. We're talking about George.
I thought
Bauer,
he kicked the match-winning penalty the other night, though, Joshuani. That was a hell of a penalty kick.
Yeah, it was. And at a time where it looked like the time momentum had changed, you must have been.
I was devastated.
Yeah.
but then cometh the man, cometh the hour, Harry Plummer.
Yeah.
But anyway, I digress.
George Bauer, yes.
I was about to say, yeah, let's talk about George Bauer, my Crusaders, mate, before we go talk about the Blues. Eh?
Yeah, sorry, yeah. Mate. No. Sorry.
Look, he's done really, really well. I think very similar to Ethan de Groot last year, getting the opportunity to be in the All Black environment, was selected last year in that Trans Rugby Championship. Didn't play, obviously, but came back and put on a big amount of weight. I think he put on maybe like 7 or 8 kgs and was obviously a direction the All Black squad coaches wanted him to do. And he came out and put on a massive amount of weight in preseason. We saw it and then and was actually being able to fill that out and then being able to put in performances in play. Some good footy, and so I think we talk around. I mean, guys like Finlay and Ethan, guys that have been injured before, but then have had opportunities to come in, and George has done that through injury with Joe and been able to play more footy this year. So, he's done really, really well. And I guess for him, it's those performances that he had in Super Rugby Trans Tasman, even Super Rugby Aotearoa, been starting and playing consistently. It's really warranted his selection because I think last year, you know, he played a little bit off the bench, come in and started a couple of games, but was actually a really big part of our engine room and was really good around his. We talk around second efforts. I think one game that he played against the Brumbies or the Waratahs, he ended up making 20 odd tackles. So you're talking about a guy who's a massive amount of work rate with putting on that weight. It's just going to make him really going good this year for the back end of that All Black series.
And you look at some of the guys in here, Carl Tuinukuafe, Angus Ta'avau, seasoned campaigners who come into the All Blacks later on in their career. George Bauer's one of those. You learn as you go and you arrive with most of those tools already in place rather than having to learn it as a 22-year-old like Ethan de Groot's going to have to.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you almost come in with a higher appreciation of the environment you're walking into and also there's no time to lose. You've got to make it work now because you know that if you don't, there will be a younger Ethan de Groot that has got time and they sort of know they've got time to work with a player that's younger. Whereas if you don't make every post a winner when you come in as an older selection, you can be, you know, cast aside if you don't nail it. And he obviously really nailed his time in that environment. You know, even though he wasn't playing, he obviously did the business. And then he took everything on board, put on the weight, and now has learnt to carry it. Because it's one thing putting on the weight, but then learning to carry it and put it into your game and not lose your game is another thing. So he's obviously done it the right way and handled himself in that sense and added to his game. I think Jace Ryan's been a massive part of making sure he's got that right.
Jace Ryan gets a lot of kudos around the place. You hear a lot of chat about Jace Ryan. He's good at what he does.
I think it's like, from the outside looking in, I think it's like he almost treats every front rower as a son. Like, he's got genuine care and empathy for every front rower. Like, he just wants to see them do well. And it's like that, he's that, you know, the best coaches are the teachers, you know, and they have genuine care and empathy for each player. It doesn't matter if they're the Joe Moody of a nearly 100 test or, you know, they're working with an academy player that's hasn't even been found. He's the same.
Yeah.
You know, you get the same care and attention, which I think.
Yeah, I think what Jace does really, really, really well is you said, Joe has a real deep care for the individual and the player. And so I think when you've got that kind of coaching style where, as a player, you know, oh, this guy actually really cares about me and wants the best for me, but, you know, can pat you on the back, but then can be really hard on you. And, like, you know, there's been a few, obviously, us Nines, we don't do a lot in the forward work, but if we go to scrum trainings or do some channel work, or whether it be just getting OT ball off the top of the line out, his accountability that he puts on those players is massive. So he's got a really good ability, and the great coaches do have a good ability to be able to care for you and, you know, give you a pat on the back when you need it. But at the same time, if you need to be held accountable because you're not doing your job, he's a pretty fiery guy and pretty good at holding those boys accountable as well.
Sounds like a bit of Mike Cron about him.
Yeah, but I think just authentic and genuine.
Yeah.
And I think front rowers like it straight between the eyes. So it works well. It's a good method.
100%. Hey, well, let's get on to this game on the weekend. You've been waiting for the punishment. Here it comes. Here it comes, the Blues. For 60 minutes, the first 60 minutes, there was only one team that looked like they were going to win that game. They played pretty well, and then suddenly those Landers stuck in there.
The Landers, to be fair, stuck in there for that 60 because the Blues played exceptionally well, created a hell of a lot of opportunities. You know, even at the 30-minute mark, it was 70% possession and 60% territory to the Blues, and they'd had six line breaks to zero, but you only had one try to show for it and a couple of penalties, and you knew that the Landers were just holding on and they're chipping away with those penalties, and you just...
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Although the Blues had that scrum dominance, you just knew that they needed that try, that second try, just to put the game out of reach. And I think when Billy Harmon stripped that one off Hoskins Satutu underneath the posts, and the momentum shift around that 58-minute mark from that strip, they got a couple of piggyback penalties. They took the three, then they took another three, and then Joshuani's big penalty that made them take the lead. You know, after all that sustained pressure that they absorbed, yep. I mean, three times the amount of tackles they had to make compared to the Blues, you just thought, man, is that a crushing mental blow for the Blues? And is this the lift that the Highlanders need just to bring this home in the last 15 minutes? But you have to credit the leaders of the Blues that were out on that field, because let's not forget, Patrick was subbed before Josh Goodhue got a head collision. He was subbed, and Tom Robinson didn't play. So there were guys, not the big leaders out there, but there were guys out there that had to take charge and bring this game home. And they got themselves in a position through, Harry nailing a penalty and then, Jared Kelly, Tuioti destroying that ruck, Hoskins getting the turnover and wading his way through, and then Blake Gibson scoring to clinch the game. But that was a telling of, I believe, the evolution of that group and I suppose their experience. That a lot of people say, well, what's changed, what's different? Well, there's a big core group there that have had 4 or 5, 6 years of Super Rugby experience, and a lot of downs, as everyone likes to keep reminding them, but that experience paid the dividends for them in a really tough pressure situation to go behind after such dominance, to then go, no, we just need to remain calm here and chip away and get the win, and do it quite comfortably in the end was, I think, a real sign of strength for where that team can go, because I think they admit themselves that wasn't a clinical performance or a perfect performance, but it was almost a bigger show of growth than anything else, than beating by 20 or 30, quite frankly, because to win the game from the 16-15 mark after that dominance and under that sort of pressure was yeah. huge, I believe.
Yeah. Sitting back watching it, Bryn, did you have the same feeling?
Yeah, I did. Like, if you look at all the stats, if you don't look at the scoreboard and you just looked at the stats that were there, you would have thought it would have been a 20-30 point win for the Blues, because they just dominated the position, the territory. You look at they had 12 clean breaks, the Highlanders had zero. Phoenix beat them with 31 and the Highlanders at 8. So they had so many opportunities, and probably the execution and being a little bit more clinical, they probably would have run away with the game. But I think another big, massive growth in where they've come, and especially in pressure situations like that, was their kicking game. I alluded it to early in the pod with obviously Finlay Christie and his. It was more so just the understanding of when to kick. The exit zone, they had a pretty clear plan. They didn't want to play a lot in their half, and Finn did some really good execution of his box kicks. And I thought the running of the kicks only as good as your chase. And Bryce Heem and Mark Tilley were really good around that area, getting that ball back or just flooding through and making the Highlanders, putting them under pressure, slowing down their ball, and then teeing off with them in their defense. Like, the Blues defense on the weekend was 90%. If you talk about winning championships, it's based more so around your defense. And when you're operating at 90%, it goes a long way to winning a game. And then just coming back to the kicking game, obviously Finn and understanding that if you're not going anywhere, they tried to play a little bit in their half a little bit, four or five phases, slowed it right down, knowing that it's not where they go, it's not there to go to play. And then between him and OT, having that communication, putting up contestable kicks and then putting them in the hurt locker and putting them under pressure and going out of their half. So, we did that a lot in Christchurch around with the Crusaders when it's quite wet and dewy. We did a lot of box kicks, and obviously with Liam McDonald having a pretty good understanding with Tasman and having a similar game plan to that, especially wet conditions. They did that a lot. And then I thought Zahn Sullivan's kicking game was massive as well. His long plugs with his left boot, putting them out of trouble, putting them in good positions. And times that he actually did kick, there were a couple of kicks that he was under a lot of pressure, and you'd think, oh, this could be a charge down here and could change momentum. But he put them some great kicks under pressure, putting them in the right ears of the park. And I just felt it just suffocated the Highlanders the whole game. And you look at that kind of 60 minutes to 63rd minute mark, when Nagy decided to take 3 points at that time, I was thinking, do they go for the corner? They've got the ascendancy. Do they want to try and, they've got a great line-out drive that they scored a lot of tries. They've got a lot of bunch of plays around the specials that would have put the Blues under pressure, but they got that penalty. And then Joshua Arne got that kick not too long after due to sustained pressure from the Highlanders. So, I thought the Blues kicking game was really good, and the points that Dripper touched on. And it was kind of the game where you'd rather win ugly and win a championship than win with a great playing, a loss playing great. So it's massive for their city. I know, being from Auckland, how much that's going to mean to them. And Gyps talks about there's been a lot of hard work that's been done, not just this year, but through a long period of time. And, it's going to be, and also, got to say to Harry Plum as well, those kicks under pressure, they're massive. And, you saw on the Blues Instagram and even the boys, you can tell how much they appreciate Harry and how much it meant to him. And it was a great way for him to have his own little spot on the game, which was great.
Yeah, he's a guy who's got his critics. People, because he came with such a big reputation at the start, people have kept a close eye on him and when things have gone right or wrong. But he stepped up.
Oh, mate, that penalty was huge, but the conversion was even bigger because there's still time left. So to take it out with 8, and he just nailed it. He's won a title doing that with Auckland, and now in a crucial moment for the Blues, he stood up. And that was the winning of the game. Because if he doesn't get that penalty, it's we're potentially talking a different story here today. So it's a massive play.
Yeah.
Massive play. And it's great for him, it's great for his confidence, and it's great for where he can springboard now, because he's now done it at Super Rugby level, and now he just knows he can do it. So he'll be away.
Yeah. So I mean, whether that's at 10 or 12, I suppose we'll come to see. But Otere Black's not going to be there anymore. So if Bowden needs a backup, I suppose it's between him and Zahn Sullivan in the future.
We've got Stevie Perifetta there as well.
As well, yeah.
But I think, Plums is there. I think Zahn's looking like he's enjoying himself at 15, so I think there's plenty of coverage there. So that can be 2022's problem. We'll just enjoy the victory.
I think
at this
one
stage.
Thing is, well, I think the Highlanders probably would have seen if they could really, because the physicality and the on defence and attack at the breakdown, the Blues were outstanding. But I thought another one as well was their set piece chip was really good. The 13 from 15 in their lineouts, which is 87%, and then their scrums. They didn't have any scrums, but the crucial scrum, moment where you need your forward back.
The scrum got the only try. That was the crucial. That was the crucial. That was massive all night. Like, they had serious dominance. And they turned down early points for that first try. And at the time, I was thinking, oh, that's a bold call, because they went to the corner, didn't quite get it. They got another penalty and they chose the scrum. And that they needed that scrum dominance to really, because then they got the advantage to allow the crossfield kick. So the scrum dominance was huge. The line-out was huge because, everyone had been on their case around, the force stealing a few in the second half the week before. But, it was massive. But just their work ethic and willingness to keep turning up for each other on D, you mentioned it. But there was one moment when Kurt Eklund covered a chip kick from Jonah Nareki that if he hadn't done it, Jonah scores. And they potentially... lose the game.
Yeah.
And that's such a massive moment for a hooker to turn, sprint, and be in a foot race with Jonah Nareki is amazing. and I spoke to Curtie after the game about it, and, he's just like, I'm just doing my job. There's no fanfare. And that's the sort of, attitude you want to keep in and around it.
I just wanted to touch on that, the viewers, the first try with the crossfield kick you talked about, Joe, and just wanted to talk around that scenario. And people at home, I remember they were talking about it on air around they had to put two on the blind side, so they had a 10 and a winger, and they only had one Bryce Hemmer on the blind for the Blues. But the ability of having with a dominant scrum, that's what that pressure does to you. So that kick for Oatsy, the reason why it makes it so much more easy is because they put an extra one over there with the threat of Hoskins and how much of a dominant ball runner he is. When you've got a dominant scrum like the Blues had on the weekend, that expression, just in particular that try, his ability to have that ball off the back of a scrum opens up opportunities for when Oates obviously seen that kick to Mark Talia. But yeah, man, I thought especially that penalty, I don't know what minute it was, it was late in the piece, but they got a dominant penalty and then they went down the corner. I think that's when Harry Pymal got the kick after that. But yeah, the Blues set piece, mate. I think if the Highlanders would have thought, if they can get a bit of ascendancy there around mucking up their line out and then, getting a few scrum penalties, but no, they dominated in all facets when it came to their set piece. It was pretty, pretty impressive to see.
Let's talk about Otere Black. I mean, he's going, TJ Fayane's going, Tom Sanders is going, Lachie Bashir's going, Nani Lamape's going. But Otere Black, he moved to Auckland, with this opportunity to be the guy who leads the Blues around the field. He's done a pretty good job of it while Bowden's been away. That's a big loss, isn't it?
I think so, because we've seen time and time again, and I'll use, Crusaders, but, also ourselves now, I suppose, and other teams that have done so well, is when you have depth to call on, that's what's going to give you the ability to go and get titles. The Highlanders referenced it themselves. They said they had 13 injuries and they were just holding on. And if you don't have the depth to call on, it just handbrakes you. He's going to be a massive loss. And he was a key part to getting the Blues a title on the weekend. But as we've seen, you sort of referenced it before that, 3 weeks ago we spoke about Nani. Probably 5 weeks ago we spoke about Nani on here and how amazing he was and how, he'd grown his game. 3 weeks ago we hear he's leaving, but now here we're talking about Quinn Tupaia and where his game's gone to. So the one thing we are fortunate with here in New Zealand is one does depart. It is disappointing, but we are a fortunate nation in the fact that we do have systems and pathways where there is someone that normally steps in and takes the role, but it's it's that experience and IP they take with them. It's an experience you can't replace, which is always the challenging thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll tell you what, it's not a bad replacement they're bringing back, though.
Oh, yeah. No, he goes all right.
Obviously, OT's done a lot of work, and he's been great for them. But I'll tell you what, if you're going to have a replacement, it's not bad to have a two-time player of the year in the world. Come back, mate.
You'll take that. You'd also take Zane Sullivan. Like, this kid doesn't play like he's, what, 20 years old?
No, he's always been mature. Like, he's been one of those guys that came in to our environment. He might have still been at school where he was in the under-20s or something. And he was always in and around, polite, just mature. You know, he's always just been reserved and quiet. It just goes about his work. He doesn't say too much, and I think you can always tell a lot about that, especially at such a young age. You know, to be in a Blues environment, you know, he didn't come in with any sort of, you know, swagger or anything, or trying to think he was, you know, a big deal because he was in our environment and he's still at school. You know, he's just gone about his business, and I think that's the way he plays. He seems to just play cool, calm, and collected.
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing that's probably helped him as well, Chip, is probably, you know, he's a 10. He's now 10 and he played at school. And so, you know, the risk would be thinking, you know, let's put him at 10. But obviously they've got a bit of depth with there. But him going to 15 and just being able to play back and have a little bit, not as much responsibility as a young fella coming through. We've talked about a lot around a 9 and 10 in Super Rugby level. It's pretty tough and it takes a lot of time to get the understandings of what it takes to be there. But I think him being a 10 and understanding what it is to be a 10, because he used to play when he was younger, and that's what's natural to him. Actually coming back and having that experience of what a 10 needs as a 15, I think it's just going to help him. So he might actually transition the next couple of years to possibly being a 10, but I think putting him at fullback to start with has been great for him. Not only at Super Rugby, he played a Mitre 10 Cup for Auckland as well.
I hope he continues liking 15, because he looks mighty good there.
He does.
Did you have Roger coming, mate?
He looked good at 12 too.
Jeez. You know, man.
Too many players, boy. What did the
Hull say about the Blues? You need that depth, don't
you? Yeah, you need that Crusaders approach.
You need that depth.
You still haven't got 10 All Blacks in the squad yet, have you?
Oh,
you
do?
Nine. So you're not quite at that Crusaders level yet.
Oh, if you include Alex Hodgman, that's 10.
Yeah.
Nine current.
There's been a bit of chat over the last little while about a World Club competition. Now, we know that this calendar is stacked, and, you know, we have issues with getting French players and stuff down. We have, you know, all of those kind of things for international footy. This thing's on the agenda. There appear to be a couple of options, a 20-team comp from all around the world's competitions, whether it's England, France, New Zealand, the Ultimate Rugby Championship, which is, you know, the South Africans now involved, right, within what was the Celtic League, and even MLR and the top league in Japan. There's that idea in a six-week comp, or there's the eight-week comp with the four best sides from each hemisphere every 4 years, which looks more like a World Club Cup kind of thing every now and then. What do you guys make of that, starting with you, Jipper?
Well, it's exciting, and I think it's exciting from a player's point of view to sort the argument out, to find out what hemisphere's club is the best. So I think it's exciting from a spectator's point of view, fans' point of view, everyone's point of view, but it's, like you say, it's getting the right makeup of the comp so that it works out, that it's fair and gives everyone the, I suppose, when the winner's found, everyone sits back and goes, yep, that is the best process to get there, and that club is definitely the best. So there's no if, buts or maybes. And I'd say that's what they're working through now. I don't have an opinion of which is better or worse, but it's about giving everyone a fair opportunity to get to that final. And once that final's played, everyone, most importantly, the fans go, yep, that is the best club, and that's how they feel. And what I'm probably getting at there is, let's go back to the conference system and how it was caused a bit of discussion between fans that it wasn't quite right. We don't want to get to that, is what I'm trying to say. So come up with a structure that keeps fans engaged and happy, that it gets to the right outcome.
Yeah, you almost you use those individual competitions around the world as the conference structure, and then you go into a pool game.
And then you go into that pool game situation. And whatever that looks like, if it's the top two or the top one or whatever, and then there's seedings. I don't know how it would work, and I don't know the calendar well enough, but I think it's a great idea, and it's extremely exciting.
Mm. Mm. I think Jim, you brought up those points. I think around that, the 20-man comp from different other all around the world, all the competitions together, it'd be pretty good. I think, you know, you want to obviously grow the game, and if you're having all the kind of the clubs together from all around the world, it's only going to have more eyes on the product, and hopefully bring in more money. And probably the only thing around that is probably the depth around some teams and some competitions. But you could do that like a two-tier competition. You know, you could have, you know, a top 10 or a top 8 that are in the top division that are applying for the best team in the world or the best club in the world. And you've got the second tier comp that's obviously can still be in the competition, but obviously the level of playing might be a little bit different. If you think about the MLR, the teams have only just come in, so the level of where the teams would be might be a little bit different. So having very similar to the Mitre 10 Cup, you've got the Premiership and you've got the Championship, and you kind of go that way. So if you want to have all the teams involved, all different countries, I think, you know, if you look around the four best teams from two hemispheres, that's probably the biggest one. If you're going to do that to go out and out one competition, that'd probably be the structure of the year. Right?
I just think especially as well, if we're going to get to the point, that we don't travel to South Africa anymore, like it's quite a cool concept for our younger generation of players to look forward to touring and that aspect of it as well. All those sorts of things to keep that aspect of our game alive, because I think that touring aspect's so cool. It's such a cool part of rugby and growing up in rugby environments.
Let me take the optimism and chuck in a bit of cynicism, or journalist pessimism.
Here we go.
We couldn't figure out a world calendar across all the different competitions. Part of the reason we can't figure that all out is because there's clubs underneath it which cause a million different issues. How the hell are they going to sort this out? It seems almost impossible.
I don't think it's impossible. I don't think it's impossible. I think there's enough want and demand, and I think that's the key point. There is the demand for it will motivate people enough.
Yeah, dollar bills.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, we want our product to be liked. And if, I feel like there's people have been screaming out for this to be answered.
Yes.
You know, like, who is the best club in the world?
Yeah.
What hemisphere does have the best club? You know, so if there's enough demand out there, then there's enough motivation to do the work to find it out. And also, as there's so many stakeholders in our game, I think there's a lot of demand, and correct me if I'm wrong, as you're a current player, Bryn, but as a recently retired player, there'd be enough motivation for me as a player to find out too and have the opportunity to do it.
Imagine, you know, like, we talk about it all the time, I think. Even during the lockdown period last year, we had Zooms with, like, Saracens and all that kind of stuff. So you imagine playing, you know, at Twickenham for a, you know, to see who's the better hemisphere between Saracens, Crusaders, or the Blues or Highlands, whoever it may be. For me as a player, man, that just, you know, that's already an inviting idea, wanting to play. It's the best in the world.
I think those are the factors that will motivate a solution.
Get it going. To me, it feels like every 4 years is right, because one of the issues that we have currently with all our competitions is probably overexposure. And people could build toward this over 4 years and be super excited about it, right? Or maybe every second year. Do we want something like this every year?
Probably not every year, but every second year or every four.
I think every 6 years.
And get it maybe cyclical, so it's not, you know, like not this, maybe a year after the World Cup or whatever, if it's every four or however, so that there were things to look forward to, you know, every year or every second year.
I need
things to look forward to. Not every four, mate.
We got something to look forward to.
I need stuff more regular than that.
This weekend we've got something to look forward to. Bryn Hall on a rugby field. You know, you've got to head off to training soon. We're recording this just before Bryn goes to training during his lunch break. Big game this weekend, Bryn.
Yeah, it is. I think, you know, any time, you know, we get an opportunity to play as Māori people in Māori rugby, it's always a great opportunity. And so it's a pretty settled squad from last year. I don't think there's many other boys that have come in. So I guess for us, the positive is having the continuity and understanding of how we all play. So having them won a Pacific game last year is going to benefit us. And, you know, it's a great opportunity for the Samoan culture as well to be able to have two back-to-back test matches before their qualifying series. So now we're looking forward to it. I know there's been a lot of rain in Wellington, so hoping that's going to clear up probably in the next 3-4 days, because yeah, it'll be a great spectacle for us playing running rugby in Wellington and getting all the fans out to hopefully see us put on a hell of a spectacle for all our fans.
It's like playing cricket at Southampton. It's going to be there.
Oh, yeah,
pretty much.
Is there,
we can play though. The only thing is that we can play. Obviously, the Black Caps can't play.
Is there a style of play you're going into the game with, or your structures are play what you see on the night? Because there's not a lot of footage you have, would there?
No, there isn't. And I think we can take confidence from last year when we played Moana Pacifica. You know, I guess in the first week here, kind of concentrating yourself. We're probably, you know, we're Māori rugby players and we have a bit of flair. And so, you know, we always want to express ourselves with ball on hand, and that'll be the objective for us moving forward. But if there's a bit of rain flowing around, which is probably forecasted for the back end of the week, then again, we'll make those decisions around game day and leading up towards that if we might want to alter our game. But look, for us, we want to put on a spectacle. We want our fans to be happy and be watching our game and saying, you know, that's the Māori team. That's how the Māori team play. So that'll be our mindset for sure.
Awesome, mate. We'll let you get on the bus. We don't want you to miss the way to training. Big thank you to Josh Iwani for his appearance too.
He's just walked out as well. He's just for now. He's stoked to be on the show.
Awesome, mate. Thanks, mate. All the best for the weekend. Thanks again, James Parsons.
Cheers, lads.
Another epic evening of analysis for the people out in TV land.
Oh, beautiful stuff.
Very good stuff. And congratulations again on the Blues winning the title, mate.
Thank you, mate.
I know you've been waiting for that for a long, long time.
A long time.
A long, long time. Great. Well, catch this weekend's game, the Māori All Blacks versus Samoa, on Sky Sport and rugbypass.com. We'll catch you again next week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Some people take the straight path in life, but at Arizona State University, we respect your twists and turns. They make our online students more driven to excel in their professional lives. That's why our personalized suite of services empowers you with innovative resources and staff that sticks with you. Make your next turn with one of our 300-plus programs at ASU, number one in innovation for 9 consecutive years. Visit us at asuonline.asu.edu to learn more.